Well, you would have seen, I'm sure, the results of the Turkish elections during the week. We intend to continue our focus on this fascinating bridge country this morning, but via a totally unexpected angle. You may not have known, I certainly didn't, that Adolf Hitler idolised Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, who turned his whole society on its head, truly, in the 1920s, helped by the Gallipoli victory, and whose big vision the current and now triumphant President Erdogan seems bent on, well, is it trimming or overturning? That's the question. Hitler's obsession was not only strategic, also deeply personal. The Führer referred to Atatürk as his star in the darkness. He confessed in 1933 to the Turkish daily Milliyet that in the dark 1920s, the successful struggle for liberation that Atatürk led in order to create Turkey had given him the confidence that the National Socialist movement would be successful as well. It's quite a tale. It certainly gripped the imagination and research skills of German historian Dr. Stefan Ehrig, author of Atatürk in the Nazi Imagination. Dr. Ehrig joined me recently via Skype from Jerusalem.
Thank you very much for having me.
So Hitler idolised Atatürk, whereas I think many may have thought his early role model was Benito Mussolini.
Yes, indeed. Usually we associate Mussolini especially with the early Nazi years, the early 1920s, and the Hitler putsch in 1923, the putsch that failed. But in fact, actually, Germany, center to far right, had been discussing Atatürk and his independence movement for years already before Mussolini came along and played any kind of role in our political thinking.
In fact, you quote, there's so many things that I didn't really know that your book alerted me to. Mussolini called himself the Mustafa Kemal of a Milanese Ankara as he began his own power grab.
Yes, we have to imagine these post-war years. They were very confusing for many, and in Germany especially, there was this national trauma. You lost the war. People couldn't imagine why, really, given all the propaganda in the preceding years. Then new systems are being installed. In Germany, you have to fend off revolutions and the communist threat. And then there is, in faraway Turkey, there's this movement to revise a Paris peace treaty, so to speak. The Turks own Versailles with weapon in hand, and then this leadership-focused system is installed in Ankara. And it's quite some fascination and has quite some attraction for a lot of these politicians.
And of course, Hitler was prone to unhealthy fixations, and some say that's what the one with Eva Braun was. I suppose that could be debated. How did you find this fixation with Atatürk did begin?
Well, again, you have to go to these early Weimar Republic years, immediately after the war ends in Germany. German nationalists, and not only the Nazis, from the center to the far right, were distraught by what was happening to them. They were very upset with their own politicians who were giving in to the wishes of the Entente, the winners of the war. And in these years, it's the mainstream press that is reporting a lot on what is happening in Anatolia and Atatürk. And this Turkish War of Independence from 1919 to 1923 became one of the major German media topics at the time. Actually, it was front page topic. It was integrated into German topics also with the same rhetoric, the same discourse. And over time, there were many, not only the Nazis, there were many nationalists in Germany calling for Germany to learn from Turkey.
Well, in
fact, to implement some kind of Turkish lessons.
You find that the German print media in the 20s and 30s gave Atatürk more prominence than the Treaty of Versailles, which quite surprised me.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as that, but there is this one key moment in these days. 2 days only after the Treaty of Versailles is announced in the German press, Atatürk is introduced as the person leading this struggle for independence. I would say that, you know, Versailles and all these issues relating to Germany's new status were, of course, much more important than what was happening in Anatolia, but it's a close second.
And would the Social Democrats in Germany have been similarly interested, or was it a particular temperament that was interested in him?
I would say it ranges from the hard to define center of politics to the far right. The left kind of resisted these calls for Turkish lessons for Germany, but in the end, German nationalists were much stronger.
as we know. There's a very interesting parallels as well between Hitler and Ataturk, particularly the characterization of the center, the rotten infested center for Ataturk Istanbul, for Hitler critic Berlin, versus the purer, more patriotic rim, in Hitler's case, Bavaria.
Yes, I mean, in these years, in the early 1920s, German nationalists established their own center anyway in Munich already. Then in the time leading up to the Hitler putsch in 1923, there was this sense that salvation could never come from Berlin. And there's many reasons for that. But of course, in the Nazi thought, it's also because there's corrupt politicians living there in this medium where Jews and communists poison everything. And Ankara, the capital, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, established far away from Constantinople, was kind of this martial, pure, nationalistic opposite alternative to these old imperial cities.
I want to move on, but it is very interesting that you quote at the trial after Hitler's failed coup in 1923, he actually, in his final speech, in trying to legitimise his coup d'etat, he used Ataturk's example of the Ankara takeover. If we ask ourselves what has legalised Kemal Pasha's deed in the end, the gaining of liberty for his nation. So, you know, that is a very interesting logic that he is starting to use, and you can see how it did start to power his sense of justice in his own cause.
Yes, definitely. I mean, at the time he was on trial for treason, so this is, of course, where he's coming from directly. He's, of course, talking about more general radical politics. And as Ataturk's example moves on in time, these examples and this radical reconstruction of the state for the better of the nation, however defined, becomes much more prominent.
My guest is Dr. Stefan Irig, who's written this quite challenging book about Hitler's obsession and fascination with Mustafa Kemal Ataturk. And it's a book called Ataturk in the Nazi Imagination. What about Ataturk's attitude to minorities? Now, how much do you assess that started to infiltrate the Nazis' views, particularly Hitler's?
Well, there's two episodes in Turkish history that fascinated the Nazis when it comes to the minorities. One is the immediate at the end of the Turkish War of Independence. In the Treaty of Lausanne in 1923, there was this population exchange between Turkey and Greece. This was already very important. But for the people discussing role model Turkey in these years, also the Armenian genocide played a crucial role. And for these nationalist or hyper-nationalist commentators, it was kind of a package deal. In their mind, Ataturk completed this quest for, national purity, you might call it. And these two things, genocide and expulsion of minorities, perhaps more the Greek-Turkish model later, these two things played very important roles in this idea about Turkey. And this evolves later on in the Third Reich to this idea that the new Turkey that Ataturk founded was the most modern national or nationalist state in the world. And his minority polities, as well as the Armenian genocide before him in World War I, were foundational kind of experiences for this new Turkey.
And there's an interesting turning point, because in 1937, the German Ministry for Propaganda actually put in a complaint, I understand, about how the coverage had become rather unbearable.
Yes, Turkey is very interesting in this respect as well. When the Third Reich begins in 1933 with Hitler's seizure of power, this image of Turkey is not something that the Nazis have to force upon the press like with a lot of other topics, but it's rather something that has been developing in, let's say, nationalist and right-wing discourse already for over 10 years. And during the Third Reich, it's also official policy, actually, to express these positive sentiments towards Turkey and to glorify this new Turkey and its leader. But at times, the press at the propaganda ministry wants to punish Turkey, because the actual Turkey actually sometimes conflicts with this glorification, and they want to punish Turkey in their own press back in Germany, and they're not able to do so because sentiments expressed in the discourses are so positive that they actually complain that the image is so positive that it's almost unbearable.
And It wasn't just Hitler, was it? People like Goebbels were also strong admirers of Ataturk.
Yeah, it goes beyond Hitler himself. Goebbels is one, for example, he read one of these many German Ataturk biographies of the time and was totally excited. But also Ernst Röhm, the leader of the radical stormtroopers, he, for example, in 1933 went on this pilgrimage, you might say, first to Mussolini in Rome and then to Ataturk in Ankara. So it's a wider kind of admiration for Turkey, and it doesn't just spring from Hitler's brain.
And Ataturk's death, Stefan, dominated newspaper coverage in Germany, even though it happened just a day, I discover, after Kristallnacht.
Yeah, that's indeed very interesting, and it kind of underscores just how important Ataturk was in this image of the modern Führer, you might say. And when he dies, all the papers from regional to national papers feature these long essays and series of articles on his funeral, on his testament, on his achievements. It was a major, major media spectacle, you might say.
I certainly know about the coverage of Kristallnacht, but I'd never heard of that. So, and maybe we could just finish by putting all of this into modern context, because you also blog quite a lot on President Erdogan. You know, you've retained a great deal of interest in Turkey. You say Erdogan likes to refer to his state as the new Turkey, just as Ataturk and his Nazi admirers did. Where do you see Erdogan going then?
That's a difficult question, of course.
Yes.
We've all been watching what Erdogan is doing for the last decade or so. What is interesting with this discourse of the new Turkey, of course, is this push for a break with the recent Republican tradition and past. And he kind of wants to reinvent Turkey. But, of course, that's already something Ataturk did. And Erdogan tries really hard now to get out of Ataturk's shadow. Ataturk's legacy is so important in Turkey that it has a quasi-constitutional character in all politics and all policy areas, really. There's a quite significant struggle going on at the moment.
It would be interesting
to see how that continues.
It certainly will. Dr. Erik, thank you very much for all this scholarship, and it's been terrific to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Master of Understatement, Stefan Erik. Isn't that interesting? The Polonsky Fellow at the Van Leer Jerusalem Institute. His book is titled, not a big one either, easily to absorb, Ataturk in the Nazi Imagination, published by Beltnap Press.